Who cheats? Well, just about anyone if the stakes are right. You might say to yourself, well, I don't cheat, regardless of the stakes. And then you might remember the time you cheated on, say, a board game, last week. Or the golf ball you nudged out of its bad lie. Or the time you really wanted a bagel in the office break room, but couldn't come up with the dollar you were supposed to drop in the coffee can. And then you took the bagel anyway, and told yourself you'd pay double next time, and didn't. For every clever person who goes to the trouble of creating an incentive scheme, there is an army of people, clever and otherwise, who will inevitably spend even more time trying to beat it. Cheating may or may not be human nature, but it is certainly a prominent feature in just about every human endeavor. Cheating is a primordial economic act, getting more for less. So it isn't just the boldface names, inside trading CEOs and pill-popping ballplayers and perk-abusing politicians who cheat. It is the waitress who pockets her tips instead of pooling them. It is the Walmart payroll manager who goes into the computer and shaves his employees' hours to make his own performance look better. It is the third grader who, worried about not making it to the fourth grade, copies test answers from the kids sitting next to him. Some cheating leaves barely a shadow of evidence. In other cases, the evidence is massive. Consider what happened one spring evening at midnight in 1987. 7 million American children suddenly disappeared. The worst kidnapping wave in history? Hardly. It was the night of April 15th, and the Internal Revenue Service had just changed a rule. Instead of merely listing each dependent child by name, tax filers were now required to provide a Social Security number for each child. Suddenly, 7 million children who had existed only as phantom exemptions on the previous year's 1040 forms, vanished, representing about 1 in 10 of all dependent children in the United States. The incentive for those cheating taxpayers was quite clear. The same for the waitress, the payroll manager, and the third grader. But what about that third grader's teacher? Might she have an incentive to cheat? And if so, how would she do it? Imagine now that instead of running a daycare center in Haifa, you are running the Chicago Public Schools, a system that educates about 400,000 students each year. The most volatile current debate among American school administrators, teachers, parents, and students concerns high-stakes testing. The stakes are considered high because instead of simply testing their students to measure their progress, schools are increasingly being held accountable for the results. The federal government mandated high-stakes testing as part of the No Child Left Behind law signed by President Bush in 2002. But even before that law, most states gave annual standardized tests to students in elementary and secondary school. 20 states rewarded individual schools for good test scores or dramatic improvement. 32 states sanctioned the schools that didn't do well. The Chicago public school system embraced high-stakes testing in 1996. Under the new policy, a school with low reading scores would be placed on probation and face the threat of being shut down, its staff to be dismissed or reassigned. The CPS also did away with what is known as social promotion. In the past, only a dramatically inept or difficult student was held back a grade. Now, in order to be promoted, every student in 3rd, 6th, and 8th grade had to manage a minimum score on the standardized multiple-choice exam known as the Iowa Test of Basic Skills. Advocates of high-stakes testing argue that it raises the standards of learning and gives students more incentive to study. Also, if the test prevents poor students from advancing without merit, they won't clog up the higher grades and slow down good students. Opponents, meanwhile, worry that certain students will be unfairly penalized if they don't happen to test well, and that teachers may concentrate on the test topics at the exclusion of more important lessons. School children, of course, have had incentive to cheat for as long as there have been tests. But high-stakes testing has so radically changed the incentives for teachers that they too have added reason to cheat. With high-stakes testing, a teacher whose students test poorly can be punished or passed over for a raise or promotion. If the entire school does poorly, federal funding can be withheld. If the school is put on probation, the teacher stands to be fired. High-stakes testing also presents teachers with some positive incentives. If her students do well enough, she might find herself praised, promoted, and even richer. The state of California, at one point, introduced bonuses of $25,000 for teachers who produced big test score gains. And if a teacher were to survey this newly incentivized landscape and consider somehow inflating her students' scores, she just might be persuaded by one final incentive. Teacher cheating is rarely looked for, hardly ever detected, and just about never punished. How might a teacher go about cheating? There are any number of possibilities, from the brazen to the sophisticated. A fifth grade student in Oakland recently came home from school and gaily told her mother that her super nice teacher had written the answers to the state exam right there on the chalkboard. Such instances are certainly rare, for placing your fate in the hands of 30 prepubescent witnesses doesn't seem like a risk that even the worst teacher would take. The Oakland teacher was duly fired. There are more subtle ways to inflate student scores. A teacher can simply give students extra time to complete the test. If she obtains a copy of the exam early, that is, illegitimately, she can prepare them for specific questions. More broadly, she can teach to the test, basing her lesson plans on questions from past year's exams, which isn't considered cheating, but certainly violates the spirit of the test. Since these tests all have multiple choice answers, with no penalty for wrong guesses, a teacher might simply instruct her students to randomly fill in every blank as the clock is winding down, perhaps inserting a long string of B's or an alternating pattern of B's and C's. She might even fill in the blanks for them after they've left the room. But if a teacher really wanted to cheat and make it worth her while, what she might do is collect her students' answer sheets and, in the hour or so before turning them in to be read by an electronic scanner, erase the wrong answers and fill in correct ones. And you always thought that number two pencil was for the children to change their answers. If this kind of teacher cheating is truly going on, how might it be detected?